Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Going further, get ready for and the Raiders this weekend. Bring in Saran Petro from WHB in Kansas City. And Saran, I'll start asking about what's the mood in KC now that they're clearly tanking? Mahomes goes down. What's it like?
The mood is acceptance at this point. You know, there's some anger and frustration from some of the fans. There's even some people that, you know, the easiest thing, it's tough to get on Andy Reid because he's, you know, been to three straight Super Bowls, taken one three championships, five conference titles, seven straight conference championship game appearances, 10 straight playoffs before this year and 12 straight winning seasons every year that he's been a head coach. So it's tough to be like, yeah, well, the guy's a moron, you know, like the record, the track record is just overwhelming. Brett Veach came along. He's been there the whole time, but he became the general manager going into the 18 season. So that's where the frustration gets pointed towards missed draft picks, but that's the draft, right? No, nobody's 100% in the draft. So there's always a spot to look at it. And I'm not going to tell you they haven't made mistakes. They have. There have been a number of mistakes in putting this roster together. And you know, but I think there's an acceptance. There's the calm fans are saying, okay, it's been a hell of a run. Now let's talk about how you put it back together and let's see Patrick Mahomes 2.0 post-knee surgery. What's the best way to re-equip this team to be as good as they can be for at least the next 5 years where you expect to get close to, if not peak-level, Patrick Mahomes? That's where most fans are. But there's the crazies that, you know, want to claim everybody needs to be fired. And I'll be honest with you, there does need to be some shakeups somewhere in the coaching staff. The offense needs to be shaken up a little bit. They're not playing the power football that other teams are playing to get teams out of the nickel and dime. They face the most light boxes and they still can't effectively run the ball. So, you know, there's some things that certainly need to be upgraded. And, you know, for a lot of people though, it's been a party for an extra 5 weeks and there's probably a little bit of like, oh, okay. You know, we don't have to throw a watch party every week for five more weeks. So it's, you know, there's mixed emotions, I would say.
What's your reaction to Matt Nagy being on some, hey, these are hot names for coaches around the NFL list?
I think the only name he's probably hot for would be Tennessee, and that's because of the association with the general manager who left Kansas City last year. And so there's a familiarity there. And I think he should be. I think he should be one of the names you look at. Should he be the hottest name? I don't know. I there's not a Ben Johnson this year, right? That was the no-brainer for definitely last year and probably even the last 2 years. Matt Nagy's been a head coach. That's an important part of the equation. I think he got a better chance to hit the ground running. And I think his time with the Bears has aged really well. Mitchell Trubisky hasn't done anything. And under Matt Nagy, he went to two playoffs. So with a substandard quarterback, he was able to win a division title and go to the playoffs and have winning records, and he was a hit crossbar away from advancing in the playoffs. So who knows what would have happened there. But I think he is a worthy candidate. If there are a lot of jobs that end up opening up, he's one of the names that should be finalists in all. And so should Steve Spagnuolo. I don't think either one of them are ones that the name wins the introductory press conference. They're going to have to go in there and be impressive, and then they're going to have to win football games. But I think both of them have the experience, and they have the Andy Reid blueprint that they've got a pretty good they're a pretty good place to start if you wanted to have a rebirth with your franchise.
Raiders and Chiefs going down on Sunday. You know, it benefits both teams to lose. They move up in the draft. The Raiders would hold on to the number one pick in this NFL draft in 2026. Ryan Petro's with us from WHB in Kansas City on ESPN Las Vegas. So is there pretty much a widespread acceptance by Chiefs fans that, hey, this is what you do at the end of the season when you're out of the playoffs and you have nothing to play for and there really is no point in winning?
It's an easy sell for Chiefs fans.
Having
watched, well, first of all, they've got all that success. They're not going to have the season they wanted. So, you know, and they're not going 0-17. They were 5-3 at one point and the favorite to win the Super Bowl at that point, and even for several weeks after that. So this year has not been a year of anguish the way it has been for the Raider fans. There was hope and optimism and, you know, belief, I would say, not just hope, belief that this team would turn it around and get things going the way they did a couple of years ago. So you haven't paid the tax of, you know, the suckage tax of being a fan that has to watch a team that's just gone awful. But they've also spent the last few years knowing they needed a left tackle. Now, they hope they've got that figured out with Josh Simmons once he comes back from the wrist injury. And, you know, they've been looking for a pass rusher. They've been looking for a number one wide receiver. And when they get bad players like Felix Onyedike-Uzomah at pick number 31, in the first round, or players that are just okay when they trade up from 32 to 30 and get Xavier Worthy. You know, they have, the fans have to keep hearing, well, it's tough when you pick at the end of every round. Well, you know, those elite tackles, they really go in the top 15. Well, if you want a true edge rusher, man, they go in the top 10. And so you just can't get to it. Well, now the Chiefs are going to be in a position to get one of those guys. They also watch their general manager trade up, 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 and have fewer and fewer draft picks. And you look at a team like the Rams, that what they do is acquire picks in the later rounds. And you know, you see Puka Nacua in the fifth, and you're like, wow, what a great pick. And then you see that they had, you know, like nine picks between the middle of the fourth and the middle of the sixth. Like, you ought to hit somebody good when you take nine tries at it. So I think there's an understanding of what the fans understand what they have not been able to have. And this is a year. And knowing that you've got the biggest piece, the quarterback, coming back, makes it a lot easier to root for. Okay, let's bottom out. Let's get him a weapon. Let's get the pass rush figured out. Let's get the number one wide out. Let's find a running back for this offense. This kind of draft position gives them a chance to do that. So I think it's, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches, to be honest with you. When the season goes bad, they're going to get what they really want.
So here in Vegas, I'm proud to say that the fans are finally getting it. After years and years and years of telling them, when you're sitting with four wins or three wins with five games left, that's it. Shut it down. But unfortunately, in places like Vegas, and I'll also speak to New York, you often have lead voices on sports talk radio who are like, you got to win. You know, it's against the grain to not go out and compete. These guys want to compete. Shut up. So fans in the past have been brainwashed into believing that tanking is wrong. The Vegas fans finally get it. Raider Nation finally gets it. And then a weird thing developed this week, and mostly because I think, well, the Raiders sort of botched it, but Max Crosby threw gas all over the fire, then became this controversy about Tankgate. And I'm sitting back and I'm like, wait, I thought this was the year that the Raiders were finally doing the right thing. It's not Antonio Pierce hijacking a season and screwing them out of Jaden Daniels or, you know, other selfish players screwing things up. I don't get it. I wonder what the outside view is on this game and what the Raiders are doing, which is clear, but guess what? There's no rules against it.
No, there are no rules against it. It's, you know, to me, it's like the whole global warming. It should have been called global change, right? You know, because you get a cold day and everybody runs around going, oh, is this global warming? Call it asset reallocation, right? Call it asset harvesting. I mean, find some other name besides tanking, but that's what it is. Listen, the player and the coach cannot tank. They have to go out and do everything they can to win. But the general manager and the owner can tank, and they should. And that's where it should happen. And you're seeing it, and you're seeing Andy Reid sign off on it in Kansas City when you see an injury report that last week going into the game with the Denver Broncos had them placing Trent McDuffie on IR with a knee injury after he practiced part of the week, you know, and was limited. Rashi Rice with a concussion placed on the IR. Tyquan Thornton, concussion placed on the IR. Jalen Watson, groin injury placed on the IR. Right. And then numerous other players not end up playing in the game. They put 18 players on the injury list. Right. And the Chiefs are more likely to not put a guy on the injury list than they are to overstate the injury list. So, you know, you saw them finally embrace it. I think for them, I think there was probably a feeling that if they could have won against the Chargers, you know, with three, that game plus two more, they still had a chance to get to 9-8. They could keep their win, you know, their winning season streak alive. And I think there was probably a feeling that, hey, there's something to that. So let's go for it. Once they lost to the Chargers last week, it was clearly everybody's sitting and we're going to try to improve this draft. And we're not going to get anybody hurt. We're not going to push forward with somebody, you know, ask somebody to push through something, which every team is doing this time of year, when there's no reward for it, literally no reward. And I think the fans would say, why'd you even try against the Chargers? But they got what they wanted, you know, and so now they will try to finish it off. And irresistible force versus immovable object here, both teams, I think, know what's at stake. And so nobody who has any kind of owie will play. And I think the guys that go out on that field will try to win, but there's really no reason for the organizations to equip them with any kind of tools to get it done.
Raiders and KC coming up this weekend, final game of the season. We know what's at stake. It's an important game for both organizations, especially the Raiders. Raiders cannot afford to win this game. Saran Petro is on from WHB in Kansas City. So you mentioned Trent McDuffie as an example. So I assume Trent McDuffie, when he was told, hey, we're shutting it down, these are the reasons that he stormed out of the facility, all pissed off, ran to Jay Glazer, texted him about how he's pissed off, and then went home and was headbutting his child because he's got a concussion, but he's all right. and sent that video out. Is that what happened? Because basically that's what happened here with Max Crosby, and the national media is like, oh, poor Max. And meanwhile, on the ground, I'm like, poor Max. That is absolute insubordination. It's outrageous.
Poor Max, poor Miles Garrett, right? These guys that took the $35 to $40 million a year. Like, if you want it out, force your way out. You know, like, don't take the check. You know, say you're not going to play. There are ways to get it done. And really, I'll be honest with you, both those teams should have traded those players, right? Now they're, you know, but Miles Garrett still has high trade value, but he's a year older. But Max Crosby's now got an injury-plagued season on his resume, and he gets more difficult
to trade. Again.
He gets more difficult to trade. And so, you know, the Raiders missed an opportunity to maximize his value. Now, I mean, listen, you know, and there's recent, like I said, all the recent success I've talked about, there's no reason to be insubordinate in Kansas City. Trent McDuffie is wanting a new contract. The Chiefs talked to him about getting that done in training camp. It didn't end up coming to fruition, which is, you know, kind of follows the line of Trey Smith, who they talked to Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith 2 years ago. They got a deal done with Creed Humphrey. Trey Smith didn't. They ended up putting the franchise tag on Trey Smith. He ended up getting the highest paid guard contract, the biggest guard contract in NFL history. So it ended up working out for him. But that's kind of the twist for the Chiefs, is like, they're top heavy on their contracts. I mean, this past year, they paid a right guard the highest contract ever for a guard. They paid a middle linebacker one of the highest contracts ever for a middle linebacker. Those are not your premium positions. But, you know, they were convinced that they could make a run, that they were right there, that last year all the close games just meant that they knew how to win. And it's kind of blown up on them. Throw in the highest paid center in football is on their roster. Throw in Chris Jones carries a $45 million cap hit next year, $78 million for Patrick Mahomes. They're $35 million over the cap next year already. And that's, of course, needing like 20 players just to fill out a roster. So they've got some serious work that they've got to do to try to get this thing put back together. And so Trent McDuffie is a guy that they want to sign. But for me, you know, Jeremy Fowler does his list where he talks to all the executives and creates the top 10 at each position. Trent McDuffie was like number 4 on that list at corner. You're like, oh, God, we got to sign him. Well, if you look closer at that list, 8 of the top 10 are 25 or younger, right? But the biggest contracts are on guys that are older. The cornerback position is like, you know, soccer players right there at their peak at 21, 22, 23. That quick twitch reaction is so much of what they do that the Chiefs will probably make a run at signing Trent McDuffie, but I don't know that any corner. Cornerbacks, to me, are the running backs of the defense. Everyone said linebackers. No, linebackers aren't even, they're not even there. Not even at that level. Cornerbacks are a position that they're a first contract position, and you should flip them for whatever you can get. The Jets actually did something really smart and getting a couple of first-round picks for Sauce Gardner, and I don't think the Chiefs will do that, but it's probably what they should do.
So Ryan Petro with us here from WHB in Kansas City. He'll join us back on the other side. This part of the show is brought to you by our friends at William Hill. Download the William Hill mobile sports app today. Then you can bet anywhere on the go in the state of Nevada. It's easy to download, and once you do, you'll get the deepest wagering menu, especially for in-game. If you're a new user, you get up to $250 in bonus bets. For more information, go to williamhill.us on the web or follow them on Twitter at williamhillus. It's the William Hill mobile sports app. Download it now. More information about the Chiefs as we get ready for the Raiders and Chiefs on Sunday. My question for Seren coming out of the break is going to be more about what happens around the organization and why the Raiders seem to always have leaks to the media and crazy stories and drama. And the Chiefs don't have any of that. And as a result, part of it leads to lots of wins.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Back here, 4 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lawyers. 766-1400, the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number. If you are in Reno, Northern Nevada, listening to us on ESPN Reno, dial 775-766-1400. All right, Seren Petro filling us in on a lot of the stories around the Chiefs as KC's in town to take on the Raiders in the Week 18 game of the NFL season. All right, Seren, so we just went through this whole thing in Las Vegas last week with Max Crosby getting mad, storming out of the facility. Then he sends a message to Jay Glazer. Glazer puts that forth. Then we see Max Crosby up on social media with some videos. We have stuff like Amy Trask is trying to out Jim Gray. It's just drama, drama, drama all the time. And yet we rarely see that with the Chiefs. Why are the Chiefs so good at being buttoned up and keeping things in-house?
You know, they got a proven coach who proved himself immediately when he got to Kansas City, and it's built from there. And then the quarterback, having Patrick Mahomes. I mean, there's, you know, number one, he's the hardest working guy. First guy in, last guy out of the building. When the best player, who it's not even close, you know, like it's like baseball, you'll see a veteran guy. Well, we brought him in for his leadership. Like, if you can't ball, if you can't play, you can't lead. I mean, it is still a high school mentality, right? Some guy may be an absolute dunce, maybe a moron, maybe bad to his family, may do everything. But if he can ball and he makes a big check, he's got some sway in that locker room. And the fact that Andy Reid polices it the right way, everyone believes in him. He's always put him in a position. And coaches that give players a chance to succeed. I remember Brian Waters, I used to talk to every week, the former all-pro guard for the Chiefs, and went on to the Pats, and I think another stop after that. But, you know, he said, look, no matter what play comes in, we're all going to run it, because you can't just freestyle. But if you can call a play that makes me look good, if you can give me a you know, tool of the trade that makes me look better, I will run through a wall for you. Like, there's one thing for all of us going through the motions of this is the play. There's another thing for being mind, body, and soul committed to what it is we're doing on that snap of the football, on that day, in that game, and every day in practice and in the offseason. When you prove to a player that you can make him better, you can enhance his ability so he looks better on Sunday and he makes more money, they will run through a wall for you. And Andy Reid has done that time and time again with all the people around him, the coaching staff as well. So there's a complete loyalty to Andy Reid and the way he wants things run. And then the owner is not the source, right? The owner is not an issue. I don't know what it is in Las Vegas, but I know in other places, a lot of times it's the owner that's causing the problems. The owner understands he's hired the right guy and he lets him do his job and he stays in the background. And, you know, I think that's been an important part of the equation. Clark Hunt is not running out to get in every photo. He's not around. He's not doing post-game Jerry Jones style post-game press conferences. Like, we try to get more access to Clark Hunt. We get like one sneak attack of Clark Hunt at training camp where they don't tell you in advance, yeah. Right? So only the beat guys, if you're a guy like me that comes up, you know, two out of every four, three out of every four practices, did I get lucky? Is it Clark Hunt? You never know, right? And so, like, you have this list of things you want to ask him about. Well, I missed it that day. You know, he was available. He stays in the background, lets Andy Reid run the show. Patrick Mahomes carries out the marching orders in the locker room and everybody follows suit. And it's created winning. And so, when you win doing it that way, everybody's happy to fall in line.
Do you think Andy Reid and Saran Petros with us, we're getting ready for Raiders and Chiefs. Saran, of course, the voice of Kansas City on WHB. Do you think Andy Reid, part of him is like, man, I really want to lose this game to F over a division rival. I don't want them getting one of the top quarterbacks. Screw the Raiders. We hate them. Rivalry.
I think Andy is one of those guys. Like, I think he probably had to be sold with a lot of the IRs that went on. You know, I think he is old school, wants to win, but I think he understands the opportunity. And I think, you know, on Monday he said, well, I want to be back if they'll have me back. And there are some people who are saying, like, well, I don't know about Andy Reid. Andy Reid, Brett Beach, you know, everybody in this organization's earned the right to be fired a year late. So if they're going to bottom out at 2-15, then so be it. Like, he's earned the right to do that. But I think he sees this as a pivotal offseason, and with where Patrick Mahomes is, a chance to step back when you're down to your third string quarterback, that's just an opportunity. Look, half the work is done for you. Let's just finish the job. So I think I think he will go out there and he will try to win. I mean, he genuinely enjoys the dissecting of the opponent and trying to go out. And I think he's probably enjoying trying to win with Chris Oladokun.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, Patrick Mahomes is the cheat code. Now he's got to do it all. He's got to scheme it all up. And so, like, I think he will go out there. He truly believes, like, listen, we got to take care of our own business. Whatever happens outside of here, we'll figure it out. But I think you make an important point, whether it's the Chiefs or the Raiders, the AFC West is much tougher with Justin Herbert and Jim Harbaugh on one side and Sean Payton and Bo Nix on the other. It's more difficult for both these teams, whatever they try to accomplish every year here moving forward.
Last one. Let's come full circle on Mahomes and the injury. Again, this is my view from outside, and this is why we have, you know, local radio guys on, because you guys know you're close to the situation. You said something that piqued my interest with Andy Reid and challenges. Is Andy Reid ready to go in next year with a similar quarterback situation? Because if I'm the organization, you know, because Andy's like, hey, it's a challenge. I can do it without Mahomes. If I'm the organization, I look at Patrick Mahomes and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to assume he's not back until 12 games into next year. Something could go wrong. I'm going to get a quarterback. And my philosophy would be trading a little draft equity and going and getting a young guy. I don't know, Tanner McKee, Davis Mills, and then I have a better chance to win. I could also develop him, and then guess what? When Mahomes comes back, I just got a showcase of 8 games for Davis Mills. Now I can flip him for a second after I only paid a fourth for him. Maybe I'm crazy, but I think they need a good quarterback in place next year.
I think, you know, last year with Gardner Minshew was the first time that the backup quarterback was younger than Patrick Mahomes. Before that, it had always been kind of a veteran, another coach in the room.
Yeah.
And so Patrick Mahomes turned 30. I think it was going into week 2 or week 3 this year, and Gardner Minshew's 29 and change. But I agree with you. And I think what would also help is if they got a quarterback that they wouldn't mind putting in the game and running a sneak with. They've been great with Kareem Hunt. On short yardage, his 1-to-go and 2-to-go success rate is actually higher than the tush push this year. That's probably a little bit of an anomaly. He is a tough physical runner, and that's one thing he does do. He doesn't really have the burst anymore, but he does always move the pile forward. But yeah, I think that's where they need to be, and looking at having an asset, because I don't know that there's anything that a player can teach Patrick Mahomes at this point in that quarterback room. And so I think having a guy that gives you a chance to develop and progress. I will say this, you know, there's the old Tom Moore line. Ron Jaworski told the story about standing on the sideline with Tom Moore, the offensive coordinator for the Colts, during the Peyton Manning days. And Jaworski said, hey, you know, 18's taking all the reps. Peyton Manning's getting all the reps here. Like, why don't you let the backup get in? And Tom Moore turned to Ron Jaworski and said, Ron, if 18 goes down, we're effed and we don't practice effed. And, like, I think there is an element of, like, when you put that much money into the quarterback, like, how much more are you going to put into the position? I think you'd like – look, if you have Jalen Hurts that you expose to so much physicality, you should probably have a good backup. If you've got somebody, you know, Jaden Daniels in Washington, who's been hurt most of his career, is a, you know, when you had RG3, I thought Kirk Cousins' pick made sense because of the injury history of RG3. Turned out they did need him. If you've got that type of guy, but Mahomes usually plays through everything, I think you hit upon it. A young, cheap option for Andy Reid to get his hands on and try to develop, I think, is the best thing for the Chiefs moving forward for their cap and for the future. And I think if they can't find that guy in the draft, there's a decent chance Chris Oladokun's that guy. He is not an NFL starting quarterback. I'm going to be clear, Chiefs fans, because he's played a couple of close games, want to get excited about it. But you'll see, there are just things he can't do. But I think at some point everybody's got to turn and pivot and start trying to develop the quarterback position. And the Chiefs have just, you know, ignored every quarterback on the board. I think they'll start taking a look at him now.
They should. Thanks to Saran Petro for hopping on with us, WHB in Kansas City. So my idea there is, one, I don't know that you can trust Patrick Mahomes to come back and be anywhere near 100%. Could be 8, 10, 12 games. I don't think that Andy Reid at 67, 68 years old, wants to punt on next season, so they better go out and get a real quarterback. Now, the question is, Soren kind of latched onto my idea of, like, actually spending some draft capital. I would spend a third or a fourth thinking, like, hey, on Tanner McKee or Davis Mills, maybe even up to a conditional second. If he plays, like, 10 or 11 games, because the way I would look at it as the Chiefs is we're gonna make this guy into something pretty good, and we'll be able to flip him. And there's such quarterback hunger out there that I can recoup that draft pick, and if I need him, then I'm going to get some good quarterback play. Or here's the other one. Do you flip it around and continue to go with old guys? Is the idea of Phillip Rivers playing for someone next year early in the season that crazy? If he actually got in shape, lost the gut, weighed 250, not 300?
Yes. Yes.
Behind a good – he's going to have to be on a team that has a good offensive line.
We have to stop this.
He was terrible?
Did you watch the Jaguars game?
He was terrible.
He was terrible. He almost threw two picks, threw one, because he had nothing on his arm. Like, it's a great story. He had a good couple of drives against the 49ers. Those also really died.
He works out. He gets the arm back.
He's you got to stop.
Getting it back.
We got to stop. Now, my thought was, he's probably going to make more money elsewhere, but instead of spending draft capital, how much would it cost to get Malik Willis?
That market is going to be fascinating.
And then you talk about, you could do it. See, you could do it the other way, which is, just outbid people for Malik Willis and then flip him when you make him good. So you could come out on top with a decent season. Mahomes comes back and you get something from Malik Willis because you signed him to a contract. And you can flip him.
Which NFL program is not going to turn around next year and probably not get a quarterback to start in the draft? And they need a good bridge. And they'd be willing to spend... What can Willis get on a 2-year deal? Like,
oh, dude,
14 a year?
Yeah, I was going to say maybe even
like
more.
$28 million with 20 guaranteed?
Something like that. I mean, what did Daniel Jones get for the most part this year with the Colts? You know, one of those kind of deals.
You want the Colts to do it?
I mean, I wouldn't mind. No, but they still they can't. The Colts are in a situation where they can't continue to kick the Anthony Richardson can down the road. They have to figure out what that is first. So unless they're going to flip Richardson for something and they'll have a vacated spot, but then you're in the same situation where you're at. So what do you do? Do you re-sign Daniel Jones and go get Malik Willis? And then what do you do when Malik Willis is good and then you still have Daniel Jones? And what do you do with that? They're just in purgatory right now with what they're going to do with quarterback. The obvious answers for Willis are teams like the Steelers, teams like Miami.
Wow.
That are going to go.
Steelers again?
Yeah.
Steelers
with
the patchwork quarterback.
That's what, I mean, these teams get hypnotized that they think they're just a quarterback away. If Rodgers retires, look, the Colts, that's what the Colts have been doing. Over and over again.
Tonight for New Year's, if you're looking for a last-second idea, Ellis Island is a fine spot. The front yard is a great spot. They've got dinner specials, big-time stuff on New Year's Eve, like Vadovan lamb, braised beef. They've got a salmon dish they're offering up. They've got multiple spots to watch the fireworks, like the deck, and also they've got their garage. They're actually going to kind of transform into a fireworks viewing area. Great spot right there on Koval, just off the strip. It's Ellis Island. Party tonight in the front yard.
Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Funk Oval, Cofield, we're getting ready for the broadcast of Ohio State and Miami. First game of the Elite Eight in the CFP. We got some basketball to get to. We're on in Reno and here in Vegas. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. I'll tell you what, I thought the non-con was a little phony for Nevada basketball.
Oh, I thought you were going to go somewhere
else. And two games don't make the whole season, but Steve Alford's team's gotten out to a pretty good start in conference.
Yes, they have. I mean, the Colorado State win, you're kind of like, I don't know what Colorado State really is. But
I thought Colorado State was going to be good. I thought their non-con was impressive.
There was, to an extent, but I thought the win over Boise State legitimizes what you've seen from Nevada to this point, which sucks because last year I was all in on Nevada, and then, of course, they – are not what
then,
I wanted them
and
to
then
be.
Boise last night, because I've really been hoping that between New Mexico, UNLV, Grand Canyon, Utah State, Wyoming, that the bully ball would be kind of beaten out of, just run off the floor. You know, that San Diego State and Boise wants to play, and then New Mexico went up there last night, and they had a 21-19 first half.
Yep.
And they wound up losing by nine.
So that game was fun. It's cool to watch these teams because there's a lot of obviously new regimes and with programs and new head coaches that we're kind of getting to see what the identities of these teams are going to be once they start playing with each other regularly. But to your point, we finally kind of get to see Grand Canyon a little bit this weekend as well. They're going to play Colorado State. I thought Grand Canyon could probably win this conference, so I'll be interested to see if they can actually get it done. This has been a great learning experience. And can I say really quickly, because I thought this is what you were going to bring up, I'm going to bash my head into the wall. How does Utah State keep doing this?
I know.
Is this now four straight new head coaches that they've just brought in and are just like, 11-1. We're one of the best teams in the conference. We're good.
I'll go as far as saying he's the best coach in the conference, and that's saying a lot because Brian Dutcher and his staff are awesome.
I can't believe
it. No, I think Jared Calhoun is the best coach in the conference.
Sure.
I think he totally gets it. Talking to him at the Mountain West Conference Media Day was just really enlightening because he like fully embraces what's going on with the portal. But we'll talk about the problems. But when he talks about it, you're like, this guy gets it. It's not bitching and kvetching.
And by the way,
going back to the conversation last hour, if you missed it, with Justin Watkins on pro players coming into the college ranks, it's really irking me that Tom Izzo and John Calipari are standing up there complaining. Be leaders in the offseason. Like, they're the ones, those are the guys who make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's just whining during the season. And that's why I really like talking to Jared Calhoun, because he's an adult about it.
And to rephrase,
and he knows he's up against it. Like, they only have so much money, so we're going to max out the money we have, and we're going to make Logan, Utah attractive, as two other coaches have done before this. And I'm not even bringing in, Stu Morrill was a great coach.
Sure. And I want to clarify, obviously his second year there, but it's just, again, they keep hitting it out of the park with these guys.
They're 26-8
last year. Here we go. We're 10-1 again or 11-1 again. Just kind of rolling. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Might have the conference new player or the newcomer of the year in the conference.
I mean, and again, I know that there's been other aspects to the way the season has started for UNLV. It does make the way this program has kind of been just stuck where it's at somewhat unacceptable when you have teams like Utah State, programs like Utah State, churning out new head coaches every 2 to 3 years and still maintaining this level of greatness.
And they're good immediately.
Yep.
There's no 10-win season.
There's no buildup.
There's no 17-win season.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Are they the favorite?
You know what? I haven't looked for a while.
I'm asking you, are they the favorite over San Diego State?
I would say right now, I mean, I don't know if I've been blown away by San Diego State. I think they're better offensively than I thought they were going to be.
81-68 last night in San Jose.
And I've been kind of surprised by the defense. The defense is starting to get better, and I think maybe I'm a little skewed by some of the blowouts that they suffered in non-conference against some bigger opponents as well. Obviously, Michigan's at the top of the memory. But the offense is really strong upside. I think they're going to be pretty good. But I thought they would be much better defensively. I still think they can win this thing, obviously. But this conference, 2 weeks into the season, Mount West looked like it was going to be the worst conference in the country. Now it looks like, yet again, it's going to be a conference that's going to have 3 to 4 NCAA tournament teams.
Good teams, really hard places to win on the road. Coming up, let's check back in on the NFL. Some final thoughts on the CFP as Ohio State and Miami are set to kick off.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Grab Bag, and then we'll head off to Dallas for game number one of the Elite Eight. They're about 45 seconds in. We'll join it in progress. Miami and Ohio State. John, I don't know where you got the idea from, but you were put on some sort of drink out of Chicago, some sort of liquor?
Yes.
What's it called?
So it's called Malort. Jepson's Malort Liqueur is the full title. So where this comes from what I understand, where it all started was the Bears, whenever that freezing cold game was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, they released a new drink that, you know, may have caught my attention. It was a big hot chocolate, one of those big fat roasted marshmallows, and the contents were Malort and Amaretto. And I'd never heard of Malort before. Yeah,
M-A-L-O-R-T.
What is that called? An umlaut with the two O's over it?
Over the O,
whatever it is. I just ask. I'm on the air that day by myself. And so I bring it up on the air. I'm like, hey, you know, they released this new hot chocolate. Like, can anybody tell me what Malort is? Malort? I don't know what this is. The responses I got of all these people that are either from Chicago or like have had ties to Chicago, it was endless. It's terrible. It's the worst thing ever. 10-year-old Listerine. Don't try it. You're going to crap your pants. All sorts of stuff. And so, of course, what did I do after the show? I went to the website, bought a bottle, and had it shipped to me because I wanted to try.
How much?
Whatever this was. In total, with shipping, $50?
No.
Yeah. Is that a lot?
I think it's pretty, that's pricey. My guess is that...
the bottle itself is probably like $30. I think the shipping...
Liquor stores in Chicago are probably selling it for $8.
Correct. I mean, on the website, it was $30 for the bottle itself. But again, they don't make it anywhere else. That's why I couldn't. It's not sold in Vegas, from what I could find.
It's weird, man.
So yeah, I had
James
you guys
and
try.
I both had a shot of it. It's weird because it didn't have a whole lot of taste going down. But as it goes down, it's just like there's like a slow burn.
Yeah.
Not like painful, but it didn't really have a whole lot of taste initially. The first taste was like I just had something like sprayed in my mouth.
Yeah.
Like some kind of cleaning. You know what I mean? Like, I envision being in the garage, and I'm like, oh, crap, I had the can turned the wrong way, and I sprayed myself in the face.
The way I can liken it, too, is when you accidentally, like, spray hairspray, like when you're getting ready.
It's got a little
in your mouth or something like that, yeah.
The description is an intensely bitter, wormwood-based Swedish style. It's Swedish.
Yeah.
Schnapps. Famously known as Chicago's unofficial spirit. I don't know about that.
Dude,
but it is known in Chicago.
The responses that I got, it sounds like it.
It's a type of Basque Brandvin.
I don't know.
I'm not a Swedish and Nordic
Apartif
person.
Apartif did whatever, something. Like the thing that you take after you're done eating that helps you digest. I don't know what the term is for that one.
I could see that. Extremely bitter.
Yep.
Herbaceous with notes of citrus and grapefruit.
I didn't.
But often compared to... Uh-oh. Now you're not going to be able to get this out of your head. Often compared to pencil shavings, rust, or paint fumes.
Sure.
So I was kind of onto it.
Yeah.
Like something in the garage and some sort of can got sprayed right in your face.
And that's so I have this bottle. You mentioned to me right now, you're like, well, the bottle's pretty full. And I keep it in my backpack because I just keep forgetting that I bring it around places.
Yeah, try it.
I was looking up different mixed drinks.
Yeah.
It's never the base of the drink. It's always it's tequila and this and this and that, and then maybe a half an ounce of Malort. It can never be the star of the drink. It's not a particularly great tasting liqueur. But at least I experienced something.
Can you drink with your kids around? Got to put them to sleep? What do you do, padlock the door?
No, I think it
depends. You can't come out. Mommy and Daddy are getting hammered tonight.
No, I mean, like, they'll...
Daddy, what's that smell?
No, that's...
Puff, puff.
I was going to say, that's after they go to bed. No, like, they're because they're old enough now, too. Like, near the tail end of the night, I'll have, like, a couple of beers while I'm, like, cleaning the house. And
I like that. It's a rite of passage.
Yeah. My kid now knows, you know, you had three beers. And I was like, yeah, I did. I'm cleaning the house.
I cannot get Schaefer beer out here. You can get it. It's just a old school beer that was brewed. I think it's a Milwaukee beer, but it was, you know, it was kind of big in the New York, New Jersey area. Was a big sponsor. Look up the theme song when you get out of here. It's pretty catchy theme song from back in the day. Yeah. I actually like it. It's kind of a low grade beer. But I remember my grandfather, he'd be like, have a couple of
minutes. Is it like a Keystone Light?
I think it's better.
Okay. What was the first time you had a sip of beer? Do you remember?
That was probably it. What age?
Yeah.
My grandfather was crazy. He liked to bust chops.
I gave
probably 6 or 7 years old.
So with Diego, 7.
Yeah.
So I let him try like a baby sip of it the other day.
And
he takes, because I remember too, it's the same thing. I was like 7 and my Uncle Ben gave me. I have the distinct memory for some reason, those old Budweiser cans. Yeah. And taking a sip of it and trying it. And obviously, like when you're a kid, I hate it. It was disgusting. Yeah. And my kid takes a sip and he just looks at me and goes, "What are you drinking?" And
oh,
I was like,
wow.
I was like, yeah, man. I told him it's called an acquired taste. You'll learn about it when you get older.
You acquire it, trust me. And then you gotta disassociate, otherwise you're gonna be a big fella unless you work out a lot. Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
So the NFL schedule this weekend is kind of weird, isn't it? I think the NFL is actually paying the price for having too many TV partners, and especially new ones that they gotta give games to. Listen to Mad Dog. I know you're a big fan of Chris Russo.
I love Mad Dog.
On First Take, as he starts going crazy about, like, hey, where are the games to watch? And on Sunday, what games am I watching? Because you got Saturday and Sunday games.
They left CBS and Fox with absolutely nothing on Sunday. There's nothing to watch. You sit, the Sunday night game is fine, but there's nothing in the daytime to watch. They gave all the good games to the primetime. You got to leave one of these games here for Sunday afternoon at 4:30.
Why?
Because I want to sit there and watch. It's the last week of the year. I got to have something to watch. There is nothing to watch on Sunday. That's the first thing. Second thing is, they knew Atlanta, if they beat the Rams, would be a factor in a Carolina-Tampa game. They got to have Carolina-Tampa, the NFL. They got to have them play at the same time as the Falcons with the Saints. You got to have them play at the same time. What, Tampa wins the game and they can't celebrate? They got to sit there for 24 hours to see if the Falcons beat the Saints or vice versa to make the playoffs?
They screwed that up.
No.
They screwed that up.
Why?
You got to wait a whole day to know if you're in?
That's the Buccaneers' fault. Tell you what. Don't have a losing record going into Week 18 in a crappy division.
It's not about who gets to celebrate and who doesn't. It's the freaking TV audience. Let's know immediately if they made it, or we can flip over to the other game.
No, stop. How about don't lose 4 straight and 6 out of 7 or whatever it is, 7 out of 8. Win one of those games, and you're not in this position.
This right here is so typical of the NFL. Integrity and integrity of the schedule and integrity with who may win the championship, they do not care. Their TV partners need to be fed. They don't care.
Seattle played on the East Coast against Carolina on Sunday. San Francisco played Sunday night to midnight. You mean to tell me this is the biggest game of the year in this division? You mean to tell me you can't give them an extra day? They got to play Saturday. Seattle's going to travel? Let me get this straight. This is the biggest game of the year. But, geez, if you're the NFL, you say to yourself, hold on now. Seattle was in Charlotte. San Francisco played to midnight. We can't have them play Saturday night. We got to give them an extra day. This is the biggest game of the year. Have them play Sunday at 4:30.
Yep, he's right.
Well, I mean, that should have been the Sunday night game.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was not the Sunday night game. I don't need Steelers-Ravens.
They have no respect for the West Coast.
I hear all this nonsense. It's a I don't care about the rivalry.
Yeah.
It's two bad teams going at it that have really, at this point, given the health of their rosters and the way that they're playing, no shot at winning a Super Bowl. Why do I want that to be the last game of the year? Last year, Sunday night football on the last Sunday was a great game. It was the Vikings. It was the Lions. The one seed was on the line. Everything was at stake. It was a good game narratively. The end of the game ultimately wasn't great because it was a ugly affair for Sam Darnold and the Vikings. But that game meant something.
Why did they do that? Why not put Ravens and Steelers on Saturday?
I have no idea. Because that's the other thing. It's not like it's one of those games where it's, hey, another result affects what's going to happen. Those are two outright divisions.
Yep.
The only other outlier is the Rams seeding, but that won't matter. Who cares? Let the Rams win to the point of Mad Dog. Let the Rams win and wait 6 hours to find out what seed they're going to be. Who cares about that?
Right.
Either way, they're going to have to, like, it doesn't matter what's going to happen there. So I don't understand what the logic is in making that game, given the travel logistics, which I think are a very valid complaint, why that it's not Sunday night and why the Ravens and the Steelers aren't Saturday.
Okay. I don't get that worked up.
But that's a lot.
That's old school sports talk. That's Mad Dog loved doing that stuff when
he
was on
FAN. I'm a real football fan, Steve. Yeah. I can't wait to watch Tanner McKee take on the Washington Commanders Wednesday at 1 o'clock.
But a lot of those guys are not. They've got a little window they're going to watch games in, and that's it.
That's ridiculous. This is also why, too. I mean, I don't want to be that guy. This is also why the NFL has put its hands in the pot with sports gambling. You want to know why people are going to watch these games?
Mm-hmm.
Because some DFS stuff, and because they're betting on these games.
Yeah.
They want to watch it. It might not matter to you, but guess what? I've got a Tanner Shuck Offensive Rookie of the Year ticket or something like that, so I'm going to watch Saints and Falcons. Which, by the way, that's the other part of it, too. I get your point. Like, these are big national guys, and they're not going to do that. They're not going to watch these games. I could give you a pretty good storyline for almost every single one of these games outside of gambling that makes them worth watching.
But I thought, and we'll put out social media on this so people can see it again, I thought Ray Cleaver yesterday from William Hill made a really good case on all the incentives. I mean, this is hardcore stuff, but like how many players need certain yardage numbers and different things. So like, hey, this is the motivation. Like, this is why this quarterback is going to play because the organization's going to jack, you know, screw him over out of his money. So he's going to play. And there were some angles there on how you should bet the games.
You know, it's going to be great theater on Sunday because they both play at 125. Watching the MVP market with Rams and Cardinals going at it at the same time as Patriots Dolphins.
You don't think it's done?
No.
Really?
No, not at all. And I think the betting market's not going
to
know
the
either.
Patriots have to achieve. Drake May's got to achieve in a meaningless game?
I don't think he has to. He's the favorite right now. Yeah. I don't think the market's accurate. I have plenty of examples to show you that betting markets, when it comes to awards, have no idea what they're doing. But I'm just saying, watching the theater, can you imagine if, because don't say they can't, we watched the Dolphins beat up on the Bills. Can you imagine if Drake May, trying to desperately win the one seed, comes out, like throws a pick, and then they bench him because it's just like, we don't have anything to play for, and the Broncos are beating the crap out of the Chargers, so let's just get him out of here after a half. And then meanwhile, Matthew Stafford and McVay, because he's pissed because they're not playing well, slings like four touchdowns in a blowout of the Cardinals.
That is good.
And those are two games going on at the same time at 125, 4:30 for Mad Dog. He can watch it.
Those cuts courtesy of First Take on ESPN and Mad Dog. I enjoyed that rant. He actually, Mad Dog, as he was going through the rant, never got interrupted at all by Molly.
Wait, is she still there? I thought she left.
No. That my stray was meant. Like, does anyone tune in now and they're like, hey, where is she?
No, but I mean, no, in all honesty, I thought she signed a deal and left. She's still on the show?
She's done.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I got confused. That's all.
She wants to do more. She deserves to do more.
Okay.
You know how much it drives me nuts. And I'm a cutter offer, but on TV, when you're the moderator and you've got all these high-priced people, here you go. Lob it in. Let them hit home runs.
Can I say what annoys me the most about media? Like the crutch that people do? Really quickly, make a point. Just make a point about anything. Say a statement.
Steelers are going to do some damage in the playoffs.
Like that in the background with the most mundane sentences you'll ever hear in your life? It drives me nuts, and I don't know why.
Listen to our lead-in show on radio. Sorry for another stray.
I was listening.
It happens all the time.
Everybody, like, there's a lot of shows that do it, but I was listening to a podcast, and one of them was just, somebody says, you know, I think that Carson Wentz is going to have to take
uh-huh.
or not even, no, not even, uh-huh. It's, I think Carson Beck's going to have to take care of the football. Like, it was just the most poignant thing he'd ever heard in his life.
We can't do this. We can't do this to close out the year. We can't do it. I listened to a show today where they were absolutely not listening to the person they were interviewing because the person ended on a strong statement or something you had to react to. And they're like, the worst is no doubt about it. Go home if you say no doubt about it in response to something. Leave. You're not listening.
You know what is the worst thing in the world?
Better go quick.
You know what the worst thing in the world is when it comes to media? I think that this is going to happen. Let me tell you why. You're on media. Like, the whole point is that you're going to tell me why. You don't need to tell me that you're going to tell me why.
John,
that's the whole point.
John, let me ask you a question on an interview. All right. Have a great new year. Be safe. We'll see you.